There were so many ditches and all right there. Just didn't know that we had to have a light at night, keep the phone in.
We need you to go on and identify yourself as if we didn't know who you are, but tell us when you were born and all that.
Well, this is Wes Lashworth, and I was born November 22nd, 1899. I was born in Burke, Texas, and we moved into Diboll in 1922. And I've been working for this company ever since then, up to the end of 64. In other words, I put in about 48 and a half years for the company here.
And what was your main occupation during that time?
Well, I started out in a carpenter gang and went from that to a repair gang on the Dollar Run, and from that a mill too at night during World War I. Worked out war stamps and war saving bonds there. And I left over there in 1919 and came to the shop. And I wound up over in the shop, working in the shop and on the road, the railroad. And so that ended my career with the company.
Sounds like
so,
you felt it. All right, I think we're ready to go. I'd be happy if you just start at the beginning and go to the end, as far as you're concerned.
Well, my name is Wes Lashworth, and the gin always called me Preacher. Used to, that was my old name, Miss B. Remember that for years around here, but I said Preacher. And of course, I'd answer them anything they called me, especially when it come time to eat. I was ready then. And I started out here as a carpenter helper, and I went from there to the repair gang on the Dollar Run, from that a mill to at night. I worked out war bonds and war saving stamps in 1916, 1917, 1918 over there. And I came from that in 1919. I came from there over to the shop. And that's where I retired from the company head up when I was working in the shop. I worked on the road. I was a conductor, I was a brakeman, I was farming. And back to business, I run a little bit, but I didn't care too much about that because I was having too much fun on the other ride. And when I came here, Mr. Watson Walker was general manager over the whole plant. Mr. E.C. Durham was general manager and vice president over the Texas Southeastern Railroad. Mr. Red Devonroe was bridge foreman, and he also wound up as a construction foreman over the mill. And the men in the office was Heine Wise, Mr. Ecton, and Fred Nelson, and Mr. Heffner, he was in the office. That was the office crew. And the roads here were so rough, you had to ride a horse or go in a buggy or walk. That's the only way you could get around. And I remember there used to be a bridge right this side of Mr. Walker, Mr. Durham's house there. And Raymond Willis and old man Lige Christian got drunk one evening, and Raymond run his right wheel off the edge of that bridge. He told old man Lige Christian, said, if you weren't so heavy, we could pull out. He said, no, you can't. He said, we're about to turn over. He said, well, I don't care about you turning over, but I'm going to stay in this car. I remember that very well. And then Mr. Durham, he didn't always had, mostly had charge of the YMCA here with the boys. He'd cast out on trips, camping trips. And he was one time our manager of our baseball team here. And we had a pretty good, I'd say, a little sawmill town team. We won nearly every game we played. We just played over on the weekend and on holidays, but we really did have a nice little country ball club. And the church houses stood upon Hines Street, up there where my old house is located. And the Methodists had the church there one Sunday night, and the Baptists had church there on the next following Sunday. And the fifth Sunday, they'd take it, swap it about. One would have a church service on the fifth of Sunday. The next one on the fifth would come the other time. And finally, then, about 1940 or 44, something like that, where the First Baptist Church went into a full-time building program, and we changed over and had church then every Sunday. And finally, the Methodists, they went into full-time service. And we all, in fact, we really enjoyed one another when the churches were divided up. Everybody worshiped together, and I had a good time. Everybody was friendly. Of course, them days there wasn't no automobiles, wasn't no TVs or nothing, and people had to visit one another to enjoy themselves. And that's where the people got around here and divulged and joined with them. Because when after TVs and automobiles began to come in, along in 23 and 24 and 25, by then the town looked like they were still friendly, but it looked like every fellow was for himself. Because they didn't want nobody to come in to disturb them on their TV program, and they didn't want to disturb them if they wanted to go out for an evening and afternoon ride. They wanted that stroll along. And we all enjoyed one another and had a good time. And the roads and ditches were so bad, for people had to have a light at night when they come from church. Even people had one of what they call a little hay burner lantern that we used for light to travel by. I know there's one dear old lady here, I won't call her name, but anyhow, she would follow along close to the young boys and their dates, and that would make them mad for her.
Oh.
Boy, they could not get along. You remember her, Miss B?
I think she could always tell the boys that had been out with her girls because to see if their pants were scorched.
What's the name of this lady?
You don't want to tell
the name of the lady.
We don't call the old soldier's name.
The old soldier.
It was something back them days with the young people and the old folks.
Did you call it a hay burner lantern?
Beg pardon?
Did you call it a hay burner lantern?
Oh, yes, ma'am. That's what we all call them. They were the night lanterns, but we called them hay burners.
Like the cow kicked the lantern.
Yes,
over.
Ma'am, because they smoked up so bad. Oh,
I see. Tell us a little bit about what it was like to work for the company.
Well, it was a wonderful place to work. Back through the days when I was working here young, the wages were mighty cheap, but ever the groceries, the dry goods, the shoes, and everything else you bought was cheap.
And
I think we lived about as good them days as we're living now. Mm-hmm. Of course, you have more money to spend now than I had back then, but everybody enjoyed it. We really enjoyed it. I really enjoyed it. I've had some hard days, and I've had some easy ones here with the company, but I enjoyed every one of them. It was a nice place to work, and there's one thing about it. The superintendents and the general manager of this plant here, if one of the employees got sick and all, they really wanted to know for how people was taking care of them, and if you needed any assistance, they was always willing and ready to come to your assistance. They were fine about that, and I don't believe that a person being could work for a better outfit than they worked for Southern Pine Lumber Company when I was working there. Of course, it changed over to Temple Industries and all, and then Temple East there. But when it was a company going, and they tell me now, it's still a fine place to work. People can't beat it. I know you can go somewhere else, may find a little better wages than you can here, but the wages are pretty fair nowadays, and people is really enjoying it. I know they had what they had then was no company store, and they had their clerks in there that waited on them. Mm-hmm. And you went in there buying things, they waited out on the scale, and Miss Fanny Farrington, she was over the driver's department on the ladies' department, and she when she came to dive on, she run a dress shop. Miss B, do you remember that? She run a dress shop right beside what we call the old library. And she ran that dress and that hat shop for years, and finally they got her to come into the store down there, the manager of the ladies and the ladies department there. And they were so worked there until she died. And I think everybody in the whole world that ever knew Miss Fanny Farrington really thought she was a fine old lady. She was one of the best.
Very good thing about her.
She was one of the best. And Mr. Bud Rutman, he was the first postmaster they had here. And Post office was in a little old boxcar, railroad boxcar, what they had for a post office. And when the mail would come in, he'd take the mail, lay it out, and just let people come down and get their mail from everybody else. And everybody laughed about it. He said, well, there's no need of me going through it when you pick it out yourself. And he finally then got to be manager over the store. And he was general manager over the whole store, the commissary store. Mr. Frank Farrington, he was a postmistress. Mrs. Eddie Kennedy, she worked for him in the postmaster. Miss B, do you remember anybody else that worked for Mr. Farrington's son's work?
Miss Farrington.
Frank Farrington. When he was postmaster.
Bertha Bowen.
Yeah, that's right.
She worked for Miss Davis.
She worked there. She worked.
She went down south somewhere, in Postmaster.
That's right.
She's down there. She worked for you first.
And Miss Davis, Kitty followed her. And she retired, and she finally got to be head postmaster when they moved it from all through the commissary building, or what they call it, the shopping center now. They had the post office over there. And she was postmaster, and then and she retired, and Miss Powell got to be postmaster as well. And Mr. Bernice Hines, he followed her. And when they done it, when they moved the post office up to the new building, he was postmaster up there for a few years, and then he finally retired. And then, Miss B, who followed her? Miss Rose Hickman, she worked in the post office, but she retired. And Sis Davis was working in that. Now she's retired. And that crew they always had up there is always friendly and always willing to stop and wait on you. And any time you came in, if there's anything that went wrong with your box or anything like that, well, all you had to do is tell them, and they would certainly come to your assistance right quick. They were friendly in that way. In fact, everybody that I always saw that had a position in any kind of position, whether they waited on people, there was always friendly and courtesy and anything this time. It made it mighty nice and mighty pleasant for people to follow after them and know the kind of this, treatment they get when they go to the people. It was a wonderful place to work. And it had some wonderful, wonderful managers and everything over each department. The town has made a severe change since Mr. Arthur Temple Jr. came here and took over. I believe he came to Diebold in 49. That's when he came to Diebold as general manager. And he went to improving the town. And people said, oh, well, said, this is going to be the prettiest broke sawmill town you ever saw. And I think it has grown every day since. They now have one of the finest offices that you can find anywhere. I look at it, I think it's one of the gorgeous, one of the best. And I know people appreciate it, the work that they're doing down, they appreciate that. And they have some of the finest people now working in that office that person can be. They're just as friendly, they're ready to show you around, and they don't mind stopping their work for a minute to show you. And it certainly makes it nice for people to go down and visit and see the improvement and all that's been made in Diebold since 49. But when Mr. Temple came here, Mr. Arthur Jr., it was pretty rough. It was a pretty rough place to get around in, but he has certainly improved it. Good concrete streets and all the going. The old Baptist church up there, when we got ready to move here, Milton Bradford was pastor here, and he went to Mr. Arthur Temple and wanted to buy some land to build a new church house on. Well, Mr. Temple said, no, I won't sell you the land, but I'll give you some land right across the highway from where the shopping center is now. And it went on about a couple of months before Mr. Temple called Mr. Bradford back in the office and told him, says, Milton, says, if you'll trade me that land back for some land, says, I'll give you land over right next to the corner that you're around. I guarantee you I'll build a road and blacktop it from the highway down to the church, or either do that or concrete if you'll swap land. And he said, well, let me call the meeting. Well, he called the deacons all together, and Mr. George Smith, he was chairman of the deacons at that time, and he said, I think that's one of the best moves that we ever had in Diebold. He said, to get a building off that highway there, because Mr. Temple wanted to keep it for commercial purpose. And so he gave us the land where the First Baptist Church is now and built us the highway down there to it. And I always give Milton Bradford credit for getting this land, because he went to Mr. Temple and talked to him himself when nobody else never even thought about it. And Mr. old brother Milton Bradford went down, and he's the man that made the arrangement for the land where the First Baptist Church is now. And I think we have a mighty pretty church building. People enjoyed it. And I'll always be grateful for Milton Bradford, the work that he did to establish in the First Baptist Church where it's located now. I know Miss B remembered when the old church was up on the hill about how the boys had knocked out the window lights and kept people busy putting in window lights and putting in doors and even tearing them down.
Oh, how did they do that? With rocks?
Yeah, with rocks and brick bats and anything that could get the hand on it. It'd go through wall of glass. They were some pretty rough kids around here, but that one thing about it, they'd always go to church.
They went to church anyway.
They went to church anyway. And look and see what they tore up. That's what the funny part is.
Look and see what they tore up.
Yeah, see what they had torn up. But it was still a great town to live in. It's still to get nice improvements down here in this government housing building. Nice places, nice house for people to live in, for retired people. I think this top of Temple, I think he even sold this land again to the government, to build this place. And I think it's a wonderful place right now to live. It's certainly nice to live there. And it's well kept, too.
Ooh, beautiful.
It's a person couldn't wish for anything much better.
Well, you know, we're talking this one. Go on.
How many units are there in this, in that one over there, and over on?
Miss B, I didn't have that.
Exactly how many units?
I'm around 40, 50. Maybe more than that.
There's 40 right in here
where you are. Then you have this big one over, you know, way behind us. And then that one over on the other side of that place is across the street.
I just wonder how many units they had built since they started building.
I was talking to Miss Inez Asher this morning over here, and she spent a lot of her childhood in Bastrop. And in fact, she was there during the Depression. And she said that they hardly knew there was a depression because of their relationship to the company. And I wonder if you felt that that was true in Dybal too, that you were kind of insulated from the effects of the depression.
It certainly was. There were a lot of times that I just made 1 and 2 days a week and was proud to get that money.
Uh-huh.
And that depression, it really learned people back then they the value of a dollar. It really did. The people today, I hope they never do have to go through one like I did, but if they did, well, they'd realize they'd begin to appreciate the value of a dollar.
Mm-hmm.
They sure would, because it was rough back then. I know out of Faster, that log camp up there, that was one of the prettier logging camps that the person ever went into.
Mm-hmm.
Had wide streets and that long street, had sycamore trees all up and down those streets, and those streets, and they were really pretty. Of course, it was a sandy hill, but it was certainly a beautiful log camp. Had homes fixed up pretty nice for those employees out there.
Uh-huh.
They told the quarter and white quarter, and it was really nice.
Really?
It was beautiful.
What work were you doing during the Depression?
Oh, I was working in the shop.
In the shop?
In the shop and on the road, wasn't it?
But sometimes they couldn't give you more than a couple days' work a week.
That's
huh?
Right. A lot of times I made 1 day a week on the log train.
Really?
It was rough back in the day.
Well, did you hear a lot of talk about Hoover hogs and all that?
Beg your pardon?
Did you hear a lot of talk about Hoover hogs and stuff?
Ooh, that was all you could hear say. And the first time that they saw any rabbits running and said, oh, well, the Depression's about over because I saw a Hoover hog running.
Oh.
Call the rabbits Hoover hogs. It was rough back in the day. It was so good. And the company was really good to employees because they wanted to stay because they knew what sawmill hands were back to the day, and they were, what they had was already trained up, and they knew what it cost to train a new hand.
Yeah.
And the company did all they could do to hold their people together. They were really nice, they sure were.
Mm-hmm.
They couldn't ask for anything better because they didn't bring the Depression home. We don't know who brought it home.
Sure.
Well, I know one thing. People always cussed to Hoover about bringing on the Depression. But if Wall Street and all would listen to Herbert Hubert, there never would have been no Depression. He tried to get them to keep that money rolling and not have no Depression, and they wouldn't do it. And at times when he was in the office, they tell me that he never drew any money for his salary, that he paid his hip out of the salary that he got. and what little salary he had left was very little. And Herbert Hoover paid his own employees out in the office out of his own salary. Mm-hmm. When John Kennedy was elected president, he never did collect the money. Mm-hmm. He told him he didn't need it. And after he got killed, his wife would take the money.
What did you think of Roosevelt?
Roosevelt. Yeah. Well, I tell you, if it hadn't been for Roosevelt bringing on the NRA and all, we'd have still been under a depression for a long time. People give him hail, Columbus, about what he had done in the foreign countries and all like that. But I think Roosevelt was one of the finest presidents that we'd had. And I think next to him, John F. Kennedy would have followed him along his footsteps. Mm-hmm. I think John F. Kennedy would have made a fine president. And I know Franklin D. Roosevelt was, because he put many men to work that was on starvation.
Yeah.
He really did. I think he was a wonderful president. He people didn't like him, but I did.
Who didn't like him?
Who's that?
Who did not like him?
Oh, there's a lot of people that are right today that give Roosevelt down the country right today.
Because of selling land and giving land to people?
That's right, because he was helping people that really that were suffering. They were really suffering, and Roosevelt helped many persons, especially when he brought on that NRA and that PWA. He began to bring that depression out into life, and people began to prosper again, and everybody began to work it, and you can hardly ever heard of anybody being hungry or in distress because time is picking up. Roosevelt was one of the finest presidents in the United States.
How about the CCC? Was there very much of that around here?
Oh, yeah. It sure was. Uh-huh. It certainly was. There's a lot of people working for that. That was what we always called the PWA, that CC business, where they had people in the Army and the boys that joined the Army. And when they get so much wheat, of course, they got the board. And that's where a lot of boys got to go to work when they didn't have no work, when they brought them that CC business.
Yeah.
And people said, oh, that was a waste of money. But I can't figure it out how it was. When you're helping someone that's really naked and hungry, and you give them a job and put them to work to where they can survive for them and their family, I don't think that's wasting money.
Yeah.
I may be wrong with my ideas about it, but I certainly don't think that's wasting the government's money.
Yeah.
Because they had it laying up there, and they ought to put some of you, and then it went back to the government anyhow, and people got some benefit out of it. I think the CC and the PWA was two nice things that Roosevelt had to do. I certainly do.
How about Social Security?
Well, when the started Social Security in 1937, people didn't like that until after they found out what it was all about. And then they began to appreciate that Social Security thing. And I still think that Social Security is a fine thing for old retired people. Because there were a lot of people that couldn't lay up much before they retired, and Social Security has certainly helped them many persons in hospitals and drugstores. Yes, it has really been a blessing to old people. And I still think we live in one of the best countries that the good Lord ever invented, is the United States of America. I still love it. I went through some hard times, but I still love the United States. Oh, Lord, I sure do.
Well, when you talk about those hard times during the Depression, and you said that sometimes you only had one day's work a week, how did you make ends meet during that time?
Well, it wasn't one way, and you just had to depend on the good Lord. That was the only way out. That sure was.
Yeah.
You know, he always tells us that a good book, that he'll always take care of the sparrows, he'll feed them, and then all like that, and he'll certainly, if people have trusted him, he'll certainly care more for a human being than he does for a sparrow. He told us in his word that he'll take care of him. And I don't think that anybody that ever trusted the good Lord in any way will ever go hungry or anything they need. I think the need will always be supplied. There'll always be a way around. If we look at it in one sense of the word, we own nothing here in this world. The good Lord owns it all. He gave it to us. He gave us strength and health to get out and work and make a living. And if that wasn't him giving it to us, I don't know why. He provided for us. He certainly did.
Do you think that people used to share more in those times when they had to share and help each other out?
Well, they did. They had them. And I remember many times when I was working at my shop or all over this whole plant, when a person got sick and everything, people donated and make up their hospital bill and pay that for them. Uh-huh. I've helped do that many a time with many persons. And people lose their home in fars, they take up collection and build them a home. It's BU, remember, we went through Farmer's home burned out there at the chapel. We took up collection and built her home. Of course, she was a widow woman, her mother. And we took up collection and built her nice home.
And Wes, we used to always bury the dead, too. You know, we take up the money and pay.
Yeah. Young people around here sit up at night. People pass away, and there wasn't no funeral home or nothing. Young people sit up, of course, at night. They have to take care of them. I've helped dig a mini grave at the Lions Chapel before the undertakers got to work at that time. I've laid off and helped dig a mini grave. They have put a mini person away.
Well, that's one way we made it during the Depression. Everybody had a garden.
Yeah.
And you remember those community gardens we had over there? Across the highway where the bank and all that is now. But everybody had a little community garden over there. And you went over there and you worked it, and then you could buy it. You could be listed around everything else. But if we can, everything we made over there, do something with it.
Who established the community gardens?
The company.
The company. Anybody who wanted a little garden.
Anybody who's willing to work, try to make them a living while they had, they could go around and pick them out a piece of land, go to work on them, and make them a garden. I know Mr. Walker provided, he provided the tools and the teams to work it with.
Teams too?
He certainly did. And he'd always see that people had something if they just don't try. Well, all they had to do was just get out and try a little bit. He'd certainly help them. Even if it was in the Depression, it was a wonderful place to work.
Yeah.
I know people have hard times and all that, but it's a wonderful place to live.
Well, so far I have yet to hear anything negative about living in Dyball. It seems to me that everybody just really enjoys
it. And there's two to the end. If people leave here, you see them coming back when they go to retire, and they'll come back to Dyball.
Really?
That's like, well, there's been lots of people who started working here that's come back to Dyball.
Mm-hmm.
Come back and make this their home again.
Where'd you get your nickname?
Hey, pardon?
Why did they call you Preacher? Did you
Preacher? And I'd always be singing and going on up at the shop, and the old shop foreman up there got to call me Preacher, and everybody else got to call me Preacher. That was all I ever knew here for years, was Preacher. Nobody called my name. He was preaching in the ball field, he was preaching church, he was preaching out on the works, he was preaching everywhere.
Because you were singing?
Yeah, because of singing going on all the time.
Yeah, when you talk about the shop, what did you do in the shop?
Well, I worked in the shop that I worked in, as a machinist helper, all the makers helper. Finally, the last 7 years I retired, before I retired there, I took the shop foreman's place and retired, and I was shop foreman. Last 7 years of my life.
Did you work under Gus Allen? Did you start to work under Gus Allen? Did he come after you?
Oh, Gus Allen was up there when I came to the middle of the show. And he was a good blacksmith, too. And I think that Gus Allen was one of the best blacksmiths I ever saw. He could really work any kind of iron that he got hold of. And he could build anything out. He really knew iron, knew how to temper it. Knew how to fix things. He was good. And we had some good laymen up there. A man, Luke Carl, an officer, a whole bunch of them up there. We were all mighty fine men. We all worked together up there. Had to, if you didn't, Mr. Wolfman, we had to cooperate all the time.
I imagine these ladies wonder why we need the blacksmith.
Back
in those days, they used needles.
Inside the shop. All over.
Machines like that now.
Mm-hmm. That was quite a job, you know.
going back to the Texas Southeastern Railroad, everyone in town called that the Take It Slow and Easy.
Take it slow and easy.
Yeah, because it was TSC initiative. I said, well, I'm going to ride the Texas Southeast, but the Take It Slow and Easy is Lufkin. And run a passenger train this morning, a local of the morning, to Lufkin is back there. And they run one from there out to what they call Bear out there. Well, their camp was out there. Gibson, the company's camp was there. They run one down, and then they move their company, move their camp up to Rayville. And they run a passenger train down, and moves it out to Walkton. And then they run a passenger train out to there. And they moves it to Bluff City. Run it, that was out at the 45 mile. And they run a passenger train out there. They go out there in the afternoon and back after they went to Lufkin. People enjoyed that. And the heap of time, when there was no passenger train, and the first one to come to Dibble, they'd get the wood foreman out there to give them a pass on the log train. They'd ride up the boost on the log train. They'd